defending liberty 1 hour at a time, and broadcasting from the RWB Network Studios in New York, you're listening to The Rhino Report. Always right.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
She got chunked. You are very rude.
If you want to turn yourselves into a greasy spot on a country road somewhere, go right ahead.
And now, here's your host, The Rhino.
Hello, hello, hello. I am The Rhino, and this is my report. Today's show is brought to you by Liberty HealthShare. Check them out online, libertyhealthshare.org. We had Dr. Dale Bellis on this show before. He's the executive director of Liberty HealthShare. And he told you, you could pay as little as $199 for quality healthcare. So libertyhealthshare.org or joinlhs.com. Get your free quote. Do it today. It doesn't matter if you missed open enrollment because since they're a ministry, there are no open enrollments and there are no penalties associated with the Affordable Care Act. So tell them the Rhino sent you and I'd be, well, grateful. I'd be grateful for that. So today's show, as the primaries head to the Empire State, the term New York values has resurfaced. I'm going to tell you why all parties involved have the wrong definition. Also, Speaker Ryan releases his first campaign ad, but I thought he wasn't running for president. I don't know. Also, Twitter continues its war, its outright assault on conservatives, but this time with a blatant disregard for personal safety. All that, plus Governor Nikki Haley, it sounds like she wants to use the men's room, I don't know, and Hillary Clinton thinks handcuffs are funny. Plus, if we have time, I'm going to tell you how you can avoid paying the new increased minimum wage in a lot of states. If you're a small business owner, you are not going to want to miss this. So, like every teenage boy's favorite magazine, you'll come for the pictures, you'll stay for the articles. That's today's show. We have a lot to do. Let's start it all off with a salute to our country with the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, the Pledge of Allegiance always brought to you here on the Rhino Report. You guys know that. If you have a recording of your son or daughter or Boy Scout troop or Girl Scout troop or class saying the pledge, even a 4-H club. You have a 4-H club, but yes, I know what that is. Even though I'm from New York, I know what a 4-H club is. So if you have a recording of them saying the Pledge of Allegiance, or maybe your whole family saying it, get the family together and say the Pledge of Allegiance. Send it to me, Rhino, R-Y-N-O, at rwbnetwork.com. Just tell me, some names or the group name and where you guys are from, and we'll give you a shout-out here on the Rhino Report. As always, a big hello to everybody listening on Red State Talk Radio Studio A and Red State Talk Radio Studio B, as well as ICRN, which is the Internet's premier conservative radio network. We're all over the place. You guys know this, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday on Studio A at 2 p.m. Eastern, and then Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday at 1 a.m. on Studio B. These are Eastern times, of course, and ICRN, 9 a.m. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. All right. I want to talk a little bit about this New York value stuff, because for the last 3 months, since that one debate, I think it was in Texas, where Ted Cruz kind of sneered at Donald Trump and said, New York values, everybody has been really misdefining what it is. You know, of course, news media wants to jump on it, and they want to say, oh, this is an attack on Donald Trump and New Yorkers from the Cruz camp. And Cruz didn't really relent after he said it. In fact, he sort of doubled down on it. But then he comes to New York, and he goes, no, no, no. I didn't mean the people. I meant the politicians. Well, if you believe in a representative government, isn't that reflective of the people? So Cruz can't back this up. And you know what? As a New Yorker and as a conservative, I don't want him to back it up. You know what? You said it. Stand by it. Stand by what you say. Is it too hard to ask for a politician in this country to stand by something they say? Why is that so flippin' difficult? Now, Donald Trump is taking this to the bank. And he has been since the words came out of Ted Cruz's mouth. Actually, you know what? I think it was the debate in South Carolina. I'm rethinking it now. I think it was the debate in South Carolina where Cruz said that. And Donald Trump came back with a very good answer. He kind of referenced 9/11 and what he thought New York was about. And it was one of Donald Trump's best answers. Was it his shining city on a hill answer? I don't know. I don't know if Donald Trump will ever have an answer like that. He's no Ronald Reagan. That is no surprise. But Donald Trump has been leaning on this statement for the last couple of months. And really how Donald Trump defines that statement in his rallies is by saying, you know, New Yorkers, we just don't take any garbage from anybody. All right, well, that may be true. I mean, I'm a New Yorker. You guys know that if you can't tell by listening to me. You know, I'm proud to be from New York. I wear it like a badge. But that's not what New York values really are. And they're not the values that Senator Ted Cruz says they are. These liberal politics. You know, these bleeding heart liberals. Yes, there are some bleeding heart liberals in New York. That goes without saying. That is nothing new. But maybe I'm more upset about the way Donald Trump represents what New York values are. Because I love the idea of this no-take-crap-from-anybody attitude. I love that brashness about Donald Trump. And Ted Cruz has some of that swagger, too. He does. It's not quite as out there as Donald Trump's. But let me tell you what New York values are. Coming from me, a lifelong New Yorker. First of all, it's loyalty. New Yorkers are loyal to their faults. We always have been, we always will be. Look no further than the teams we all cheer for. I mean, lifelong New York Mets fans, that's loyalty. New York Islanders fans, that's loyalty. New York Rangers fans, I mean, they have 4 Stanley Cups in 100 years. That's loyalty if you're going to be a New York Rangers fan. We are loyal to each other. We are loyal to our families. Now, I know a lot of places everybody says, well, families stick together and families come first. It's a little bit different here, and I'm not saying it's different in a good way or a bad way. New York, and especially the 5 boroughs and Long Island, were settled for the most part by Irish and Italian. Now, Irish and Italian have very, very big families for the most part. I'm generalizing, of course. But family here always comes first. Now, everybody says that. It's one of those buzz phrases. But I'm not kidding you. This place, you do not mess with somebody's family. You just don't do it. It doesn't matter if you were joking. It doesn't matter if you meant it. You don't mess with somebody's family around here. And I know that goes for a lot of places. Maybe our attitude that we have here, the New York swagger that we have, maybe that accentuates what I'm talking about a little bit. We're very competitive here in New York. Competition runs rampant here. If your neighbor gets a pool, guess who's getting a pool next year? You are. Whether you can afford it or not, you're getting a pool. And not just a pool, a larger pool than your neighbor's. You may have a slide or a diving end or some waterfall feature or a sheer descent feature. You're going to get a pool. You're going to get a better pool than what your neighbor got. And then the next year, your neighbor's going to tack on all sorts of add-ons to his pool. That's how it is here. If your grass is green, your neighbor's grass is going to be greener. The competitive spirit around here is, it's crazy. I've lived all over New York State. I've lived up in the North Country in Lake Placid. I've lived out west by Buffalo. I've lived on Long Island. I have lived all over this great state. The competitiveness is unmatched, especially in the metropolitan area, New York City, Westchester, Long Island, the 5 boroughs. It's crazy. And it's not a bad thing either. You know, it's what drives an economy. Competitiveness drives an economy. If you have a business selling widgets, well, the next guy who wants to sell widgets isn't going to say, well, I can't sell widgets because This guy over here does it already. He's going to sell a better widget cheaper. And then he's going to sell more. He's going to drive your price down or drive your quality up. It's a competitive nature. We have here on Long Island one of the largest, actually the largest industrial park in the country. It's like 6 square miles. It's pretty big. It's called the Hop Hog Industrial Park. Now, in that industrial park, there are probably, 20 major pharmaceutical companies who all produce the same vitamins, the same echinacea, the same B vitamin, the same D vitamin. They all produce the same thing, yet they all make multi-million dollars in profit. It's because of the competitive nature that we have here. Now, I know there are industrial parks in other parts of the country. That's just the way it is. It's good, and that's really good. That drives jobs. Now, forget driving around this industrial park at any point during the morning or the mid to early after or late afternoon. I mean, it's a total disaster. That it is. I wish we were more competitive with our roads around here. Like, you know, Connecticut has good roads, so should we. Well, they don't care about that kind of competitiveness. But that's what we do here. If I get a BMW, my neighbor gets a Porsche, and then their neighbor gets a Maserati, and then their neighbor gets a Bentley. And maybe that's not indicative of the type of values a conservative has, but it's still competitiveness, because our values are irrespective of political affiliation. You guys have heard me talk before about what I call meocrats. Meocrats are essentially people on Long Island and New York City, and I'm sure they exist other places as well, that vote for somebody purely on a single topic because they want something done that's going to benefit them. I have referenced the windmill farms off of the east end of Long Island a few times on this show. They were going to put a bank of, 20 or 30 windmills out in the ocean about 7 or 8 miles. It was off of the South Fork, which if you guys aren't familiar with the geography, that's like where the Hamptons are and Montauk and all that. They call it the end. It's corny, but so they were going to put this bank of windmills about 7 or 8 miles offshore, and it was going to harvest the wind, and through a cable, it was going to help lower the cost of electricity for Long Islanders. Now, our electric costs here are astronomical, and we don't even have buried lines. Everything's up in the air. It's really bad. So that sounded great. Everybody loved the idea. It was going to drive costs down about 5% per household, which, given our prices, was a pretty good amount. But there were 7 people who lived on a road called Dunes Road out in that area who decided they were going to raise holy heck about this, because at about 6:08 in the morning, if they were sitting on their front porches looking out over the water, they would see a little glint of sun coming off of these windmills early in the morning. Now, of course, only on days when it's sunny, but it didn't matter. This glint would appear for about, 15 seconds every morning before the Earth's rotation just took it off of those windmills. Again, assuming you're up at 6:08 in the morning, sitting on your front porch for, 5 months out of the year, because those are the mornings you could sit on your front porch at 6:08 in the morning and not freeze. But these 7 or 8 homes on Dunes Road got together petitions, and they got signatures, and they got it on the local news. And then they elected officials in their area because of their monetary influence that these people had, and they knocked down the idea to put these windmills up off into the ocean. The entire island, 5 million people, had to succumb to the will of 7 or 8. You got that right. You heard it right. Now, that is not what I think is indicative of New York values in every sense. I believe that the spirit is there. The spirit of, I feel like I'm being infringed upon, I'm going to put a halt to this. That part may be New York values. But the meocrat, they didn't care which politician they elected was going to do it. They didn't care if they were Republican or Democrat or working families or communist or Green Party. They didn't care. All they cared was somebody said, we're going to knock this down. Now, how somebody has the power to knock that down when it's in international waters, I have no idea. That I don't know. I'm sure money went under the table and every which direction. But those are the Miacrats that I often talk about on this show. And they aren't just here, they're everywhere. But it's that nature in them that gives them that little bit of New York values. Now, you know, they say what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Now, this wasn't good for either by knocking it down because our rates, of course, keep going up and it is what it is. Maybe at some point somebody will tell these people, hey, listen, you're the minority in this situation. It doesn't matter what you think. Maybe if we elect a strong conservative, that's what will happen. Because conservatives believe upon or above all everything else, that majority rules. We are a nation of laws. We are founded on the concept of democracy. Majority rules. But until that happens, and we take a big swing to the right in this country, the Miacrats will still have the upper hand, especially here on Long Island. Now, I talked about family. Family is really big here. I think it's partly due to the Irish-Italian descent that a lot of people, I wouldn't say everybody, it's not everybody here, but I would say more than half the people on Long Island in the metropolitan area of New York are of either Irish, Italian, or both descent. And family values is just a common thread that goes through them. We're very protective in New York as well. We're very protective of each other, and this may fall under that family values. But I think it's different also. Because people here, now we have our Common Core testing. It was yesterday, and I believe it's next week for reading. It was yesterday and then, or Thursday. And then next week is our math test. People here, again, irrespective of their political affiliation, pull their kids out of school for that day so that the test scores, so that the amount of people taking the test gets lowered. And then funding gets lowered, and eventually with the hopes of ending this Common Core in New York. Now that's protective of their taxes, that's protective of their children, that's protective of the future. Very protective. And it doesn't matter what politician they voted for in the past. There are many people on these school boards who also support the parents pulling their children out of these tests. In fact, there are a lot of superintendents around Long Island that have called for it. I mean, of course, to the chagrin of Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York. Protectiveness is something that we embody here in New York. We protect each other. If someone's house gets robbed next door, you're going to go see if they're okay, and then you're going to help try to protect them. That's just how we are. It doesn't matter what issues you had in the past. We're all about protecting each other here. Now, maybe some of that stems from September 11th, 2001. It went on before that. But that was a game changer, especially here. I know nationally it was also a game changer, but here it was a game changer. You started looking at everything differently. And that brings me to perseverance. We persevere through a lot here. Whether it's Hurricane Sandy, which was really devastating, and it wasn't even that bad of a hurricane, whether it was 9/11 or the attacks before that in the 90s, it doesn't matter. We persevere. It's what we're built on here. It's almost like if you were to go back and you were to look at the Battle of Manhattan or the Battle of Brooklyn back in the Revolutionary War, George Washington and his men stranded after a terrible defeat in Jamaica Plains. Terrible defeat. They had to somehow get off of Long Island. Now, Brooklyn and Queens are on Long Island. As much as they don't want to be, they're on the actual body of Long Island. There's no bridge from Nassau County to Queens. So George Washington had to get his people off of the island, and they had to flee. In this case, it was going to be to Valley Forge. But he took a couple of boats, and in the middle of the night, loaded his army, onto a couple of boats, several times, back and forth across the East River, around British slave ships, in the middle of the night. It was his last option. The army had been beaten back. George Washington and his men had been beaten back all the way to the East River. They had nowhere to go. They knew in the next day they were doomed. They were doomed. So they had to do something. And this was a Hail Mary, to try to snake these boats full of men around slave ships across the East River and to safety. I mean, it's a crazy story. But he persevered. And his last option, his last possible option, because fighting wasn't working, running wasn't working, now what do we do? We know we are doomed tomorrow. What do we do? And that's what they did. They persevered. And maybe some of that has filtered down into New York. And then especially after 9/11. Now, Donald Trump referenced 9/11. And he said he was there, he saw it, and it was terrible. Yeah. But Donald Trump wasn't the only one that was there and he saw it and it was terrible. Most of us saw it. And we didn't just see it, we smelt it. We could feel it. We could the pulse of the area had slowed. Everybody was looking up at the sky. What was going on? Was another plane coming? What was up? And now here we didn't see any planes in the sky because of course the FAA shut everything down. We had this crystal clear blue sky. It was something I'll never forget. And the only planes going through the sky that day were F-16s. It was an image I'll never, ever forget. Seeing the smoke on the horizon as the trade winds took it, as it rised up from the ashes at ground zero, went about 1,000 feet into the air, and then started drifting off to the south and to the east. It was just this line of smoke for days across the horizon. Most of us here knew somebody who perished. I mean, 3,000 people. It's hard not to. It's hard not to. Personally, I've lost as well. I'm not going to get into it, but it was devastating. But we persevered. I mean, it wasn't just a couple of months later. We dug up the area, we cleared the rubble, and we put in the foundation for the Freedom Tower. One World Trade right now. And just a couple of months ago, we put the spire on top. This great LED spire, and the flag waves on it. It's an amazing sight. Is it the Twin Towers? No. That vision is gone. That vision of the skyline is no longer there. Even if you go to baseball games, now a lot of the teams here have skylines up on like the top of the scoreboard. They have a heart or something over the Twin Towers. They didn't take them down. They just put it over it. But perseverance is really the key to New York values. We persevere. It's in our DNA. It has nothing to do with punching back. It has nothing to do with liberal politics. It has to do, because with even living on Long Island, living in New York City is not easy. It's hours and hours of traffic every day. You are relegated to a 50 by 90 piece of land. Your taxes on a 50 by 90 range from $10,000 to $20,000 a year. You got to persevere, man. You got to go to work. You got to work overtime. You got to do it, and you got to spend time with your family. This is what gets you through it. I would never recommend moving here. I wouldn't. In fact, people are leaving because we've been priced out of the area. We've persevered for as long as we could. We fought the good fight. That's what we do here. That's the most important value associated with New York values, is perseverance. And that's what solidified me as being a conservative in my youth. In 2001, when the towers fell, I was almost 21 years old. So I was of the age of reason. I was over 18 years old. I was working. I was going to school. And I looked up at this smoke billowing across the sky. And I heard my neighbors crying. And I saw the blood banks being set up at train stations. People walking around with weapons. Yes. I saw that. People walking around with weapons, exposed. They didn't care about concealed carry. We were in the middle of a war. And I saw this and I said to myself, never again. We can't let this happen again. And this happened solely because of Democrat and liberal politics. That's how it happened. The Clintons had the opportunity to take Osama bin Laden and get rid of him, kill him, execute him, imprison him. They had the opportunity and they didn't do it. And that's what solidified me as a conservative. When I see what conservative values are, nation first, military first, family above all, the Constitution, safety, protecting our borders, that is the most important part of what we believe as conservatives. And I said that day, I will never in my life vote for anybody who had anything to do with what happened on 9/11. And by being a Democrat, you are guilty by association. Guilty. 100% guilty, you are culpable, and you should never hold public office in this country. Those are my New York values. All right. Let's take a quick break. Quick break. And then we'll be back. And we have a lot more to get to. A lot more to get to. But as always, head over to Twitter and give me a follow. At Rhino on Air. That's at Rhino. R-Y-N-O on Air. Or shoot me an email. Give me your thoughts. I'd love to hear about what you think about New York values. Rhino, R-Y-N-O, at R-W-B Network. And you can always check out the Rhino Report website, rhinoreport.com, pretty simple. And I'll see you back in about 90 seconds.
You're listening to the Rhino Report, always right on the RWB Network.
Hey guys, if you've missed the open enrollment for Obamacare, you need to listen up. Liberty HealthShare has the answer. Liberty HealthShare offers an affordable healthcare option that allows Americans to enroll any time of the year. For those of you who have already enrolled but just aren't happy with the plan you chose, there's still hope. Liberty HealthShare allows Americans to control, manage, and direct their healthcare, yet still be in good standing with the Affordable Care Act. Members are exempt from tax penalties and mandates imposed on individuals for not having health insurance, thus giving you freedom from insurance. Liberty HealthShare empowers their members by giving them the ability to choose any doctor or hospital across the nation. Any doctor or hospital. Memberships are for individuals, couples, and families, offering a variety of options to best suit an individual's medical needs. If you're a freedom-loving American like myself, and you're looking for contract-free healthcare, then this is for you. For more information on how to enroll at any time of the year, call them at 1-855-585-4237. That's 855-585-4237, or visit libertyhealthshare.org on the web. Do it today.
This is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. Let us never forget that police lives matter.
All right, we are back here with the Rhino Report. I am your host and your friend, the Rhino. I hope you had a chance to go check out rhinoreport.com. I think it looks pretty cool. I think it's a cool site. We're going to be adding some more stuff to it pretty soon. We're going to have the Rhino Reporters, so we're going to have some people there who write articles for us, and I think a few of them you might know already. Let's talk a little bit about Paul Ryan, because I'm not sure where to go with this, to be honest with you. Paul Ryan has said numerous times now that he does not want to be the nominee. Now, he said also he didn't want to be Speaker. What he meant was he didn't want to run for Speaker, so because he gladly accepted the nomination. I think the same thing is going on now. Now, up until this point, I believe it was nothing more than a conspiracy theory that there's people on social media have been throwing around that he will be the one elevated to the nomination if the convention does not go the way of Trump or Cruz. I'm leaving Kasich out of it because he just can't win the nomination based on the current set of rules. I thought these were just baseless, faceless rumors. But maybe not. Maybe not. Today, Paul Ryan and his camp, his band of merry idiots, have released a video. Now, I'm not going to call it a campaign video, but I'm going to play you the sound from it now. It's only 45 seconds. Let's see what you guys think about it. What does this tell you? All right, listen up.
What really bothers me the most of politics these days is this notion of identity politics, that we're going to win an election by dividing people rather than inspiring people on our common humanity and our common ideals and our common culture on the things that should unify us. We all want to be prosperous. We all want to be healthy. We want everybody to succeed. We want people to reach their potential in their lives. Now, liberals and conservatives are going to disagree with one another on that. No problem. That's what this is all about. So let's have a battle of ideas. Let's have a contest of whose ideas are better and why our ideas are better.
I'm Paul Ryan, and I approve this message. Oh, wait, that wasn't part of it, was it? Well, to me, that sounds like the beginning of a campaign video, of a campaign. But it's not a campaign for me and you to go vote for Speaker Ryan. It's a campaign for, I don't know, let's say, delegates, possibly. That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like the GOP and the RNC have decided that Donald Trump and Ted Cruz can't get people to coalesce or unify behind one of them, because really it's become more divided now. That's what Ted Cruz wanted all along, was get this down to two people, because that way it brings him closer to Trump, and it worked. That's what has happened. Take Kasich out of this and we're neck and neck, man. We're right there. It's 50-50, and neither one can sway the other's voters. So this is the GOP's way of trying to say, okay, here I am, I'm Paul Ryan, I'm the voice of reason. So everybody calm down and just coalesce behind me. That's what this is. They have said no, this is not a campaign video. This is just simply, a set of ads we put out because Paul Ryan said he was going to be a better communicator. Ashley Strong, she is the spokesperson for Paul Ryan. She says, upon taking this job, Speaker Ryan was clear he would need to do things differently. Speaker Ryan is a communication speaker, as he promised. Ryan introduced the hashtag Confident America theme in a speech at the start of his speakership. The State of American Politics speech was just a natural follow-up. So this is just a natural follow-up to what he's been doing. So when he's not passing, you know, cromnibus budgets, he's, you know, talking about the state of American politics, and how we need to have, I guess, more battles. That's kind of what that sounded like to me. Make no mistake, this is a campaign video. Whether they choose to admit it or not, I don't believe anything politicians say. You can't. They have lied for so long. And it's not just establishment Republicans. It's everybody. Democrats, Republicans, independents, doesn't matter. They all lie. It's what you have to be. It's part of the prerequisites of being a politician, is you have to be a good liar. We all know that. It's not just a joke or a punchline. It's the truth. So this, I believe, is the first of potentially many. This is on the internet now. It's on YouTube. I think eventually you will see some of these coming out onto network TV. You'll probably see them on like Fox News first or Newsmax or something like that, I would imagine. That'd be the first place they air them. So we need to keep an eye on this. However, the convention rules, I don't want to get into it for a long time because we have so much to get to today. But as it stands now, nobody but Trump or Cruz can be the nominee, because Rule 40B, we've all heard this 40B thing, I've been saying it for months, say you need to have the majority of delegates in 8 states. Now, Ted Cruz only has 7 states right now. He doesn't qualify under 40B. He probably will get one more state, which is what he needs to now qualify to be on the ballot. Okay? They've said that the Rules Committee is going to get rid of that rule, or they're going to recommend they get rid of that rule. And then they also make a lot of other recommendations too. They give that to the Convention Committee, and then the Convention Committee decides which rule changes they're going to bring to the floor for a vote. Now, we saw in 2012 when Boehner brought 40B to the floor, it was pretty even. The yeas and the nays were pretty even, and John Boehner says, well, since it's not contested, Rule 40B passes, and the place exploded because there were more nays than there were, you know, yays. I feel like, I don't know. But this will probably not get passed, because if you have Cruz that has the 8 states he needs, plus Trump supporters and these pledged delegates, they will not let that rule change. They will vastly outweigh any nays. And here's the thing. If Speaker Ryan tries to pull a Boehner and say, whoop, I guess there's no opposition, even though it was louder, the place will, it will become chaos. Delegates will leave. I wouldn't be surprised to see Cruz and Trump take their delegates and leave. So I don't think this could really happen, because I don't think the rules will get passed on the floor to allow someone to be elevated. Now, if the convention goes beyond the 4 days and people have to pay their way to stay there in Cleveland, who knows? At that point, anything is possible. I think the establishment wants to wait this thing out as many days as possible, so people start leaving and there's proxy voting and whatever else. That's what I think is going to happen. I don't think we'll have a recognized or a ballot, a true bill, if you will, during any of the first 4 days. So we're going to keep an eye on this, but that sounds an awful like a campaign video to me. Let's take the bus and head down to South Carolina. Now, South Carolina, their governor, Nikki Haley, she's pretty popular. She's of Indian descent, I think. That's what I've heard. That's the rumor, right? I mean, if you haven't heard that a million times. She decided she was going to endorse Rubio, and then, well, Rubio dropped out, and then she's going to endorse Cruz. You know, that's what a lot of these people do. They just, oh, I'll endorse this one, and oh, they're out, oh, okay, so I don't really care, I don't have any conviction, so I'll just go to somebody else. She is now fighting a bill in the South Carolina legislature that pretty much says if you are a man and you have male plumbing, or if you're a female and you have female plumbing, you need to use a male or female restroom. That's a pretty... why we have to pass laws like this is really beyond me. But she's kind of speaking out against it because she sees what's happening in North Carolina and Georgia, where governors have passed, or in Georgia's case, not passed, vetoed, bills that allow for men to use women's restrooms and women to use men's restrooms if they identify, quote-unquote, those are my air quotes if you can't see them, as a woman or a man that particular day at that particular time, I suppose, because you can't just arrest somebody and say, well, you're not a female. And a guy can say, well, yeah, right now I feel like I'm, you know, having hot flashes, so I'm a female. I mean, I don't know. But she is now speaking out against it. She doesn't want this rule in place that says you must use a gender-specific bathroom. This is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. It is, has anyone ever thought to ask the women of this country how they feel about this? How they feel about sharing a bathroom with a man? Now, only 0.2 to 0.3%, right, 0.2 to 0.3%, so one out of every 300 or 400 people identify as transgender. That is a small, small number. I mean, very small number out of 350 million Americans. It's a tiny, tiny number. And here we are, once again, succumbing to the will of the minority because we just don't want to fight them. We don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. And you wonder why someone like Donald Trump is doing so well. Because he doesn't care about hurt feelings. He doesn't care about spilt milk. So Nikki Haley is abandoning every conservative principle. Values. Maybe are these South Carolina values? Should I judge them based on that? Is that how we should judge South Carolinians now? These are your values? No. I mean, of course not. But because most of you are very smart. Most of you have a brain between your ears, and you're very smart. I don't understand why these governors and why these people decide that they're going to side the people who didn't vote for them. Where do they have the gall to turn their back on the majority, the plurality, whatever you want to say, of people that casted a vote for them? Did you ever think about, maybe your father or your mother out there, would you want a full-grown man sharing a bathroom with your 12-year-old daughter? Would you want that? Does that make any semblance of sense to you? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, Nikki Haley, you are going in the RINO category, and not the R-Y-N-O, that's the good one. You're going in the R-I-N-O, Republican in name only. That's what you are. That's what you are. Stand up for the people who voted for you. All right, let's go to somebody who's not a RINO. Somebody who is very much a conservative, a patriot, in fact. Sarah Palin. Now, I have to admit, back in 2012, I didn't have the highest opinion of Sarah Palin. I was happy that there was a patriotic woman who was running for vice president. I was glad she was outspoken. I liked her brashness. But I wasn't the biggest fan of Sarah Palin. I have grown to like her much, much more over the years. And I know a lot of people have grown to dislike her more over the years. But what happened to her this last week on Twitter was absolutely terrible. Now, we talked about this, I guess she's a singer or a rapper, Azealia Banks. I still don't know how to say her name. No one's told me how to say it. But she just went off on Sarah Palin, talking about all sorts of things that should be done to her, and she should be hurt, and she should be raped, and all this stuff. And this is because Azealia Banks read an article, a fake article, that was knowingly fake by the author about Sarah Palin and how she's a racist and all this. So Banks goes off on her on Twitter, deletes her tweets, whatever, and then writes an apology letter to Palin, but at the end of it, reaffirms everything she said in her tweets. So Sarah Palin said she's going to sue her. I don't know how far that will actually get. I guess we'll find out. That will be in the news. But somebody wrote a letter to Twitter, to their Terms of Service department, saying that Azealia Banks had violated the Twitter of, code of, you know, conduct, essentially. It says, the high-profile Twitter user at Azealia Banks openly continues to advocate for rape, violent, brutal sexual and physical violence in offensive, vulgar, abusive, and obscene terms towards a targeted woman and her family in clear violation of Twitter's strong stand against this sort of behavior. So, this goes on. And the person who wrote this letter to Twitter also cited all the tweets that Ms. Banks had said. Things, you know, I'm not going to say them because they're just too vulgar. She cited all this stuff, and then she cited a bunch of different articles about it and what Twitter defines as hateful conduct and what Twitter defines as violent threats, direct or indirect, copying and pasting it from Twitter's Terms of Service, all right? So Twitter responded and said, we reviewed the content and determined that it was not in violation of the Twitter rules. We are happy to revisit this decision if you're able to provide further evidence of violation. And it goes on. Well, the evidence was there. Here are the tweets. Here's your terms of service. You were given the evidence, and you have chosen not to act upon it. Twitter has been doing this for a long time now. They don't like conservatives. I don't know who runs Twitter. I don't really care who runs Twitter. I use Twitter. I'm surprised I haven't been shut down yet, and who knows, maybe that's coming. But this is a clear assault on conservatives. Here is really one of the most prominent conservative figureheads, Sarah Palin, getting just outrightly abused on their platform. And they say, nope, nothing to see here. We don't see anything. It looks fine. What if this was against somebody else? What if these statements were made against Michelle Obama? What if they were made against Hillary Clinton? You can bet your bottom dollar this person would have been suspended from Twitter indefinitely. Forget like a 10-day Twitter jail or whatever they call it. They would be gone. Not only would they be gone, the FBI and the Secret Service would be all over them. Twitter routinely doesn't let conservative hashtags autofill. You know when you go to the search bar and you put hashtag like R-E-D, like Red Nation Rising pops up? No. A lot of times it's not there. Wake up America, not there. Just not there. They don't let it autofill in a hopes to try to quell our speech. There needs to be something different out there. But for the time being, we have to deal with Twitter. But the problem is that this has been going on for a long time. There needs to be an outcry. People need to get on Twitter and call for the banishment of Azealia Banks on Twitter. Calling for the rape of Sarah Palin. Calling for the beating, shaving her head, making her do all sorts of terrible things. No. No terms of service violation here, Twitter says. Twitter, you're not fooling us. We only use you because we have to. You know, you're kind of like Scott Grasseed. You have to buy Scott because nothing else is out there. That's kind of what Twitter is. You know, and Scott has weeds in it too. I use Scott Grasseed. There's weeds in it. Well, there's weeds in Twitter, and they need to be dealt with. All right, let's go to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, she thinks that handcuffs are pretty funny. She thinks handcuffs are funny, and it will never happen. She was doing an interview today, Friday, with Matt Lauer on the Today Show, and he says, you know, what do you say to the people who think that you may not be the nominee because, you know, of all of these, this FBI investigation and whatever else into your emails? And she goes, oh my goodness, Matt, I know they live in a world of fantasy and hope because they've got a mess in their hands on the Republican side. So here we go. We're going to switch the argument. Apparently we have a mess. Apparently millions of new voters coming out to vote for new candidates who are anti-establishment is apparently a mess. And we live in a fantasy land. That's us. She thinks we live in a fantasy land. Is she crazy? She is completely off the reservation. You know, he goes on to ask about the pending charges. And she goes, that is not going to happen. There is not even the remotest chance that it's going to happen. She says that this whole thing with the FBI is just a quote-unquote security review. That's what she thinks. It's just a security review. And she says, I'll tell you, sitting here in the Bronx in this cafe, we're moving forward. The Republicans' fondest wishes will not be fulfilled. This is, what is she doing? Do you think it's in any way a good idea to call out or make fun of or laugh at the FBI? I don't think that's a good idea at all. I mean, actually, in the history of bad ideas, that's probably right up there. Laughing at the FBI? Now the FBI is going to be interviewing, or they have already started interviewing, her aides. Uma Abedin and Jake Sullivan and Cheryl Mills and Sidney Blumenthal. They're all being interviewed. And in May, they've already said they're going to sit down with Clinton. In fact, James Comey himself has said he will be doing the interviewing with Ms. Clinton. You don't get interviewed by the director of the FBI if everything is hunky-dory. It doesn't happen. She is delusional. Delusional of the highest order. You know, it was funny yesterday. She sent out a press release, and it said, Ms. Clinton will be taking the subway today in the Bronx. Okay, great. Who cares? So, of course, all the mainstream media had to show up to watch Hillary Clinton take the subway. She was fooled by the turnstile. She didn't know how to operate the turnstile. Now, we don't have coins anymore, tokens. We have what's called a Metro card. And the Metro card is very simple. It's a two-sided card, as most cards are. One side is yellow, and it says Metro card in blue. The other side has a black stripe on it. Okay, very simple. And on the turnstile is a scanner, and it says put your card in this way. So she put her card in, and five times it took her to actually operate the turnstile at the subway. This is the person who says she's one of us. You know, she can't even use a subway. She says she hasn't driven a car in decades. Hasn't driven a car. And Bernie Sanders isn't much better. He's not much better. In an interview with the Daily News, his editorial board interview with them, he said, I could use a subway. Come on, I've used subways plenty. So the guy says, well, okay, how do you use a subway? Just, you know, humor us. And Bernie goes, oh, you go and you buy a token and you put it in. And everyone starts laughing because we haven't used tokens in New York City for a decade. A decade we haven't used tokens for here. So, Hillary Clinton, she's one of us. She uses the subway. She's really good at it. This had to be one of her more embarrassing public moments. And you know she's screaming at somebody. Somebody got fired over this. Someone got fired. What's funny about her, too, is she has her campaign headquarters in Brooklyn, but she doesn't go there. She has a separate campaign headquarters in Manhattan. That's the one she's at. And if you go into the building in Brooklyn, where her campaign headquarters is, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying you won't talk about anything you see or hear in that building. This is the person who's one of us. One of us. So, Mrs. Clinton looks stupid, and, well, that's not that hard to do. Let's talk about her husband, Bill. Pervert Bill for a little while here. He was doing a rally. I guess you can call them rallies. I mean, can you call it a rally if it's less than 20 people? I don't know. But they were doing a rally in Philadelphia. And he spent 15 minutes of this rally arguing with Black Lives Matter supporters. Now, these Black Lives Matter supporters, they somehow get into these Democrat functions. For Trump and Cruz, they don't get in. They just don't let them in because they know they're going to cause trouble. But since the Democrats just want their support in the worst way, they let them in. If you remember back, I think it was September or whatever it was, Bernie Sanders making that speech in Seattle, and a couple of those two black women stormed the stage and took his microphone. I mean, what a weak moment, first of all. But they let them in because they want to align with them in the worst way. The problem is Black Lives Matter doesn't want to align with anybody. They just want to align with themselves, and they don't care about the politics. They care about getting their agenda done. Now, while some instances, that may be somewhat, you know, you could applaud that. We don't care about your politics. We want our agenda. Okay, I get that. It sounds like any other lobby group out there. But Black Lives Matter, they don't really listen to reason sometimes, right? Not every person that gets shot in the commission of a crime was innocent. They're still perpetrating this hands-up, don't-shoot thing when the FBI and the DOJ said it never happened in Ferguson with Officer Darren Wilson, who I don't even know where he is anymore. We learned Michael Brown had attacked Darren Wilson, and Darren Wilson fired back. In fact, Michael Brown had went for his weapon, and he fired back, ultimately killing Michael Brown. This is what the DOJ said, and they were looking for any reason to blame Darren Wilson or blame race. But they couldn't find it because it's not always the case. There are some instances where cops maybe use their weapons a little too readily. Sure, maybe it happens. I believe it's probably less than 1% of the shootings are instances where the cop maybe shot a little prematurely. And if it's less than 1%, that's an average I can live with. It is. That means over 99% of the time, they do it the right way. And that's pretty good. There aren't too many guarantees in life, but I'll take 99%. So these Black Lives Matter people, they get up and they are now accusing Bill Clinton of signing laws that imprisoned more black people throughout the 90s. These laws were aimed at imprisoning drug dealers and people who joined gangs and committed gang violence. You know what? Maybe not the worst set of laws in the world. Bill Clinton had done worse things through his term, R.E. Monica Lewinsky. But he says to them, I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-olds hopped up on crack and sent them out to the streets to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought these were good citizens? He says, you're defending people who killed the lives that you say matter. Tell the truth. You're defending people who cause young people to go out and take guns. Bill Clinton's not 100% wrong here. It's a little embarrassing that he spent 15 minutes arguing with these people, these protesters. Donald Trump would just say, get him out of here. Get him out of here. Ted Cruz, too. Get him out of here. I'm sure Kasich would, too. Kasich might give him a little more of the time of day. But you can't argue people who don't deal in facts. Black Lives Matter don't deal in facts. Much in the same way that the Fight for 15 people don't deal in facts. They don't deal in facts. If you raise minimum wage, people will get laid off. Those are the facts. As a business owner, I can tell you those are the facts. I thought it was funny. I was watching an interview on Neil Cavuto a couple of days ago, and they had a Fight for 15 person on there, and she had the sweatshirt on, and she worked at McDonald's or whatever she did. And across the top of the sweatshirt, it said, I can't breathe. Now, what does the death of Eric Garner have to do with the Fight for 15? Do you think maybe it's fueled a little bit by the Black Lives Matter protesters? I don't know. So, I'm not going to get into how we can get around the $15 minimum wage increase. I will do that Monday because I have a list of ways how small businesses can get around paying that. And these are perfectly legit and perfectly legal ways to do it. And it's going to be a game changer. So you have to listen up on Monday. I didn't mean to tease it and not do it today. Just I only have about a minute left, and I don't want to rush through it because it is very, very important. It's going to be a cause of mine. Fighting this $15 is going to be a cause of mine, okay? I don't agree with it. I think it will send us into a depression, and I've already laid out the reasons how that could happen. So I'm going to be talking about it a lot because I think it's very, very important. It's not that I don't believe a living wage should be applied to jobs. I do believe that. However, I do believe you also can't force people to pay something that an employee might not be worth. Why should somebody who's making French fries make the same amount of money as an apprentice iron worker who's building buildings? Okay? It shouldn't be the same. And it's going to lead to a lot more bad stuff. So That's it for today, guys. We'll be back on Monday, all right? Same bat station, same bat channel. Have a great weekend, or if it's Sunday and you're on Red State Talk Radio Studio A, I hope you had a great weekend, and we'll see you in about 12 hours. So, depending on how you're listening, as always, a huge thank you to those serving our country at home and abroad. Also, a huge thank you to those in the law enforcement community. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for all your hard work. We all depend on you. God bless all of you. God bless all of your families. And until Monday, have a great weekend, everybody. I'm the Rhino, and I'm out.
You've been listening to the Rhino Report. Always right. Copyright 2016.